Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. I am Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me on this path, Dr. Michelle Live. You can get the app on iTunes. You can also log on to breadboxmedia.com. You can call me 573-4BREAD-4. You can weigh in. You can give me anything you'd like, suggestions, comments. Your personal experiences are really the best. So there's all kinds of ways. Oh, yes, and my email. DM live at breadboxmedia.com. DM live at breadboxmedia.com. All right, so today we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to turn down our path just a tiny little ways. And I want to talk about the power of women. I want to talk about what it means to be a powerful woman, why that's important, why you are supposed to be a powerful woman. And men, listen up. Why you want a powerful woman, why you desire a powerful woman, and maybe you don't know it, why you might feel threatened by a worldly powerful woman. So we're going to try to get to the difference between what's a real powerful woman. I mean, do we have to have a bunch of muscles and go socking our way out through life? No, not necessarily. So we're going to start with, oh, I was inspired. Actually, let me tell you how I was inspired. I was inspired today because one of our contributors, Timothy Putnam, put on our contributor website, which is for us, and so it's not a public domain. He had this awesome idea. It's kind of like, well, if you were sitting down with, it was about the quotes. What are your favorite quotes from whoever, saints, whatever? And one of our contributors, and I think her last name is Siba. I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm just blanking on it. Anyway, she put down a quote from Joan of Arc. And I thought, oh, wow, yes. It was something like, I am not afraid. I was born to do this. And I thought, yeah, yeah, I get that. I've always been inspired by Joan of Arc. I've read a little of her history. I have a great big book about Joan of Arc that I have not read. But what I just found so amazing about Joan of Arc, we're going to talk about Mary. We're going to talk about Joan of Arc. We're going to talk about St. Paquita. We're going to talk about Pope Benedict. We're going to talk about being a woman in 2016. We're going to talk about being a mother. We're going to talk about men. We're going to talk about what men need in order to be men who can nurture good daughters, who will be powerful women, who will be good and powerful and loving and just and hopeful. Because so men, you need to listen up too. You really do, because we blew it. We've been blowing it. We've been blowing it since the beginning of time, so let's not get too hung up on it. That's our lot on life. We've traveled through the valley of the shadow. So really, we do. And the shadow of death, we do. And sometimes you look at death and you think, well, death, you know, like all the seven deadly sins, which of course, yes, will lead you there. But what is the death of all deaths? What is the one thing that will assure you, just pulverized, bottomed out death? It's the death of hope. Death of hope. And this is what we get when we look at powerful women, powerful saints. This is why Catholics, you know, I have been in and out of the Catholic Church. I was away a long, long time. There are things that make my head spin. I just think, oh my gosh, I just can't get behind that. But Catholicism's 2,000 years old. And before that, it was born of Judaism. It was, Jesus was a Jew. And it didn't just wipe everything out. It just kind of evolved with the world. It told people, we did it this way for a while because God needed it done this way for a while. But now Jesus is coming to tell you a little bit different way. You give to Caesar what Caesar's, but there's a whole other matter of the heart here we need to start considering. And so in that, we come a little bit away from the black and white. You did this, we'll stone you. You did that, we'll stone you, you know? You know, this guy dies, marry, then brother gets to marry wife. Women have been venerated throughout time. There have been matriarchal societies. But as I'm getting inspired by this quote of Joan of Arc today, as I'm seeing it, and I'll get the contributor's name because she's so darling, and I haven't listened to her programs yet, but I'm going to, so you should too. But as I'm looking at this, I'm reminded, yes, I'm always going back to Saint Josephine Bakhita. And Bakhita has a very special meaning, and it also, how I found her is amazing, and I want to share that with you throughout the program. So I'm going to share with you her meaning. I'm going to share with you the meaning of power. I'm going to share with you what Pope Benedict said about Saint Bakhita and hope. I'm going to share with you what Father Cristino said about Saint Josephine Bakhita and why that's so important. And I also want to share with you why Saint Josephine Bakhita she's awesome and important in today, because she is the patron saint of human trafficking and sex slavery, which is rampant in your backyard. You can live in the suburbs of Lexington, Kentucky. And that's why I mentioned this place, because 15 years ago, interviewing a woman who was working for Catholic Charities, whose job it was to head up a team about human trafficking and sex slavery. Right there, we were talking in Louisville, Kentucky, was talking to me about a little hotel downtown Lexington, Kentucky, where women were literally chained to iron beds. And people walked by getting their lattes and their quick lunches and their organic salads while they go back to their law firms or whatever they do or their teaching. And right there, maybe even on the bottom floor in their little coffee shop, right above them are girls who've been told that they're going to be working in some rich person's house or that they're going to get an education. And they're not all from other countries. And this is really important for you to know. They are not all from other countries. The Catholic Church actually has a toolkit, but you know, I asked UCCB, I think. Anyway, the Council of Bishops. I sent away for it, but I haven't heard anything. So I better double check and see if they have a contact us. There's a kit. I think it's called the Shepherd's Toolkit that has supposedly a lot of resources that you can actually learn yourself and maybe at least increase awareness in your own community about human trafficking. So the Catholic Church is kind of on this, but you know, just like a lot of things in the Catholic Church, I kind of hear about it here and there. You don't really see a lot of these things in the forefront. But then once you just scratch the surface, you do see a lot. So I am not going to talk today a lot about human trafficking, but I want to get into that. But Saint Josephine Bakhita is the patron for human trafficking. And let's start praying now and asking for her intercession, because there are little girls in the mall right now, and little boys, excuse me, but little boys. They're almost as much as little girls who are targeted, little American kids targeted by other kids their age or maybe a little older to lure them and like them and make them feel okay. And who hasn't had self-esteem problems? And sometimes self-esteem problems are so deep, that those little girls and those little boys are very vulnerable. They're very prone to all kinds of things, and not just their little bad choices. Sometimes they're just prone to, like, being at a mall looking at a t-shirt and someone taps them on a shoulder and strikes up a conversation. And over maybe a period of a week or 10 days or longer, they end up in a motel room somewhere or in a van, and they are now sold into slavery. It's happening right now. Well, we're not talking about that. That's not going to be the focus. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Mary, the most powerful woman in the world, as said by National Geographic, Mary, the most powerful woman in the world, on the cover of September 2015, which I actually... It might be December, actually. December 2015, that makes sense because it was right before Christmas. And it doesn't matter to me right now what's inside. It does a little bit if they're not so great. But I am telling you that it's true. And it's true so much, even if it's going to be a more secular approach in the National Geographic. I actually never read this. I got it before I went on a plane and in December 2015 to go to Oregon. And I saw the picture and I thought, oh, I'll get that. I never actually read the article. And I just happened to see it today while I was going to the printer to get some things from about... That Pope Benedict wrote in his encyclical about hope and about Saint Paquita. We're going to revisit a lot of that after the break. But Mary, the most powerful woman in the world, as proclaimed by the cover of National Geographic, and I would expect, which is kind of fast forwarding to things I don't know about, that perhaps there's a little secular view in here, but you know what, it's beautiful there. I shouldn't even make that judgment, and some of these pictures are absolutely beautiful. So we will see you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. We'll catch you then.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You were walking on this road with me, Dr. Michelle, live, 573-4-BRED-4. Your thoughts on Mary. What do you think? Do you think she's just a quaint notion? Do you think she's just a hopeful in our brains? Do you think she is a real, real, real presence? Protestants get all mixed up. I talk to so many of them because some of the volunteer work I do is... It happens to be run by people who are of a Protestant or a more evangelical faith base. And a lot of times, you know, sweet, loving, heartfelt people, they just really, well, you know, you worship Mary as a god. And we don't. We really don't. And I will say that I knew Mary was Mary. I was brought up in a Catholic school, Catholic household. We never were the rosary saying family. Like a lot of people in our neighborhood at the time, they would go to each other's houses and say rosary. We really weren't a part of that. I just remember the long, long, black, beautiful rosaries that would hang off of certain nuns' habits when nuns wore the long, beautiful habits, which I yearn for today. I long to see them. Not that there's anything... I don't want to demean the sisters out there who don't wear the long habits, but there's just something when you see it, there's no mistaking who they are. The long, beautiful, beautiful rosaries, and you know how those, I'm sure many of you have that thought of the nun fingering the beads and maybe making little whispers as she's walking around. And then after a while, you know, it just, life went on. And I, like I said, I was in and out of the Catholic Church a lot early on, and then out for a good part of my life. I just couldn't get it anymore. And then in 2003, there was a, I had a very strong experience, which I may share with you at another point. And Mary really ushered that in. And I will tell you, I will say unabashedly and with full confidence, Our Lady of Guadalupe came through for me like you can't believe. And I really didn't know anything about her. I really did not know anything about her. She just kind of popped into my face. And so that's another story for another time. So we're going to go into power. So this particular National Geographic from December 2015, Married the Most Powerful Woman in the World. I'm not going to go into the article, but you know what? Let's start with their first page, because over in the corner, it says the world's most powerful woman in red. But the rest of the entire two pages, that was the pages that fold open, is, well, let me just read it. Holy Mary, Holy Mother of God, Holy Virgin of Virgins, Mother of Christ, Blessed Mother, Mother of Divine Grace, Mother Most Pure, Mother Most Chaste, Mother Most Admirable, Mother Undefiled, Mother Most Amiable, Mother God, Mother Good of Good Counsel, Mother Inviolate, Mother of Our Creator, Mother of Our Savior, Virgin Most Prudent, the Virgin Mary, Virgin Most Venerable, Virgin Most Renowned, Virgin Most Powerful, Virgin Most Merciful, Virgin Most Faithful, Mirror of Justice, Seat of Wisdom, Cause of Our Joy, Spiritual Vessel, Vessel of Honor, Singular Vessel of Devotion, Ark of the Covenant, Tower of David, Tower of Ivory, House of Gold, Health of the Sick, Help of Christians, Morning Star, Our Lady, Mystical Rose, Comforter of the Afflicted of Heaven, Refuge of Sinners, Queen of Patriarchs, Queen of Angels, Queen of Prophets, Queen of All Saints, Queen of Apostles, Queen of Confessors, Queen of Virgins, Queen of Martyrs, Queen conceived without original sin, Queen assumed into heaven, Queen of Peace. So beautiful. And I do apologize for the reading, because this is, if you just open up National Geographic, it's on two sides of, you know, the binding kind of got in the way a bit. It's very beautiful. And at that moment, that's a prayer. We're saying a prayer. And if you're listening to that, you're saying the prayer. So Mary is the most powerful woman in the world, all around the globe, continually and ever since the beginning. The opening of the hearts to a mother, a womanly presence as Mary, is astounding. And in our Lenten journey recently, we had a moment and an opportunity to appreciate this woman who walked the walk with her son, who looked at her son and knew who he was and had to watch him die, and honored his last request. Behold, he told her to look at John. Behold your mother. Mother, behold your son. And then she became all of our mothers, and that's pretty awesome. So what does Pope Benedict have to say about hope and power? Well, he has an encyclical, and I really have to confess, I really haven't read too much of Pope Benedict, a little bit, but I really didn't. And I was, I think I was partially, no, I'm trying to think if I was partially out of the church by then, but I don't quite remember the time frame. So I do want to bring your attention to something from his encyclical. It's a very long letter. It's 34 pages printed in smaller type. So here he's talking about, I think this was the date. Let's see what the date is. I'll have to get that in a bit. So this is an encyclical letter from Pope Benedict. And he starts off by saying, "In hope we were saved, says St. Paul to the Romans, and likewise to us. According to the Christian faith, redemption, quote unquote, salvation is not simply given. Redemption is offered to us in the sense that we have been given hope, trustworthy hope, by virtue of which we can face our present." Now, listen to that. Pope Benedict, you're kind of awesome here. All right, let me read that again. Redemption is offered to us in the sense that we have been given hope, trustworthy hope, by virtue of which we can face our present. The present, even if it is arduous, can be lived and accepted if it leads to a goal, if we can be sure of this goal, and if this goal is great enough to justify the effort of the journey. Now the question immediately arises, what sort of hope could ever justify that statement, that on the basis of that hope, and simply because it exists, we are redeemed? What sort of certainty is involved here? Then he goes on to talk about hope and faith. But let me go down further. He says, he quoted St. Paul, but I'm not going to read the quote. I'm going to go so we can lead into St. Bikita. He says, "Here too we see a distinguishing mark of Christians, the fact that they have a future." Now, I want you all to listen up. I want to see your ears jump up like my German shepherds do every time we're in the car and he happens to see another dog. His back gets straight, his head goes up, and his giant ears just, you know, you just couldn't get him any straighter. I could balance a plate on them. So I want this for you too and for me. "Here too we see as a distinguishing mark of Christians the fact that they have a future." So we have a future. You have a future. And not just the future in heaven. You have a future today. This next second, right now, you have a future. So the future isn't the second. So we live in the present, but we're being guaranteed we have a future. So you have a next minute. You have a next minute. "It is not that they know the details of what awaits them, but they know in general terms that their life will not end in emptiness. Only when the future is certain as a positive reality does it become possible to live in the present as well. So now we can say Christianity was not only, quote, good news, the communication of a hitherto unknown content. In our language, we would say the Christian message was not only informative, quote unquote, but performative, quote unquote. That means the gospel is not merely a communication of things that can be known. It is one that makes things happen and is life-changing. The dark door of time, of the future, has been thrown open. The one who has hope lives differently. The one who hopes has been granted the gift of a new life." Now, we're going to be able to get into what he says, and he actually talks about Josephine Bikita. This is just so cool. So, and I think he did this before I even knew she existed. I'll tell you all how I found her in a bit. So, "The one who hopes has been granted the gift of a new life." That's all you need, folks. We'll see you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. Email me, dmlive@redboxmedia.com. See you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. You are with me on Dr. Michelle Live. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4BREAD-4, what is your favorite Mary? What is your favorite Mary story? I was so introduced to Mary in a way that was so roundabout. It's so funny and it's so cool. I won't tell you. How's that? I want to get to what Pope Benedict says. It's way better. But what's so funny is it just hit me that it's kind of like you are with your kids. You know, sometimes you can be really direct with your kids and sometimes you have to kind of sneak around the back door a little bit, you know, when they're just like in the store and they're like throwing their tantrum and you're looking like that mother who has no control over their child and your child knows that. So that's why they're throwing the tantrum, because they want that little shiny bauble that's on the checkout line. And so you find your way to distract or to get the child on the right path for you at that moment. And also perhaps to find a better way to teach or to discipline. And that's what happened to me. It was like, it was not like, oh, I think I'll join the Catholic Church again and I think I'll read about Mary. And it was quite unusual, but that's all right. So I'll tell you that story some other time. I want to get back to Pope Benedict, because I was really like, I thought, wow, how cool is this? Pope Benedict wrote about St. Paquita. And I thought she was obscure. I thought I found this person because I never heard of her, so therefore no one else must have. That's a very egocentric way of looking at things, I guess. But I really had never heard of her. And I'm going to tell you the little story. And my co-contributor, who I really don't know, but he's just a sweetheart, Andrew Whaley. I did happen to hear him the other day. He's on the counter position. And he was saying to his listeners, you know, I'm going to start telling stories because the stories are good as far as his life and some people like them. But he said, if you really don't like them, please tell me. Or if you think they're great and you need more, please tell me. Because, you know, we don't know. And so, yeah, you can email me and say, we don't need to hear your stories. Or, yeah, we'd like to hear your stories. It helps. Or be indifferent. It's okay. But, yeah, that was pretty funny the way he talked about that. So how I found St. Paquita is I was traveling all over the place. My life was just out of control. And I was going Kentucky, California, Arizona, Arizona, California, Kentucky, Arizona, California, all over, motel, this, that. It was just exhausting. And our CEO, Leo Brown, who has his show as well, then was with Real Life Radio with him once a week. No, I think it was Breadbox. Whatever it was, he was going to start doing some YouTubes. He suggested that. And I thought, well, how the heck am I going to do YouTubes with my program, if I'm 1 minute in a motel room someplace, or I'm sitting out in the middle of the desert in a car trying to get a signal, or how am I ever going to do that with a background? And so I looked online to try to find something I could carry with me to have some semblance of an anchor behind me on a wall, so it wasn't just some weird curtain. And I found a site that had these paintings that basically they roll up and you just stick them on a wall and you can take them off. They self-stick, but they're not adhesive. And so I'm looking and I found a whole line of saints and Catholic and religious things, and found a beautiful one of Jesus walking on the water and helping Peter, and one of Saint Francis. And then here was this woman, this African-American woman and I thought, well, who the heck is she? She was not in any kind of religious garb. And it said St. Paquita. And her face just got me. And I ordered it. I didn't know who she was. I thought she was, and I ordered a really great one of Joan of Arc too. And then I thought, well, I better start looking her up. And then I did. And I just thought, wow, this woman is amazing. So let's get back to, that's how I found her. And she is now becoming way more, and that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And I think I'll get that back out because now I've been traveling again. I move again. I think it's rolled up in a closet somewhere. So back to Pope Benedict and his encyclical letter. I think it was 2007. It says, yet we talked about, I'll finish that last line we broke with, the one who hopes has been granted the gift of a new life. So hope gives you a new life. I like that. So he says, and this is in number 3 of his points of about 40 something points. So, you know, it's 34 pages long, and I think he's got, 50 something points. So this is in the paragraph 3 or point 3, section 3. Yet at this point, a question arises. In what does this hope consist, which, as hope, is redemption? The essence of the answer is given in the phrase from the letter to the Ephesians quoted above. The Ephesians, before their encounter with Christ, were without hope because they were, quote, without God in the world, unquote. To come to know God, the true God, means to receive hope. We who have always lived with the Christian concept of God and have grown accustomed to it have almost ceased to notice that we possess the hope that ensues from a real encounter with this God. The example of a saint of our time can come to some degree help us understand what it means to have a real encounter with this God for the first time. I'm thinking of the African Josephine Bakita, canonized by Pope John Paul II. She was born around 1869. She herself did not know the precise date in Darfur, Sudan. At the age of 9, she was kidnapped by slave traders, beaten till she bled, and sold 5 times in the slave markets of Sudan. Eventually, she found herself working as a slave for the mother and the wife of a general. And there she was flogged every day till she bled. As a result of this, she bore 144 scars throughout her life. Finally, in 1882, she was bought by an Italian merchant for the Italian consul Callisto Lignani, who returned to Italy as the modest advanced. Here, after the terrifying masters who had owned her up to that time, Bakita came to know a totally different kind of master. In Venetian dialect, which is what she was now learning, she used the name Peron for the living God, the God of Jesus Christ. Up to that time, she had known only masters who despised and maltreated her, or at best considered her a useful slave. Now, however, she heard that there was a Peron, or Paron, above all masters, the Lord of Lords, and that this Lord is good, goodness in person. She came to know that this Lord even knew her, that he had created her, that he actually loved her. She too was loved, and by none other than the Supreme Paron, before whom all other masters are themselves no more than lowly servants. She was known and loved, and she was awaited. What is more, this master had himself accepted the destiny of being flogged, and now he was waiting for her at the Father's right hand. Now she had, quote, hope, unquote. No longer simply the modest hope of finding masters who would be less cruel, but the great hope, quote, I am definitively loved, and whatever happens to me, I am awaited by this love, and so my life is good, unquote. Through the knowledge of this hope, she was, quote, redeemed, unquote. No longer a slave, but a free child of God. She understood what Paul meant when he reminded the Ephesians that previously they were without hope and without God in the world. Without hope because without God. Hence, when she was about to be taken back to Sudan, Bikita refused. She did not wish to be separated again from her Paron. On 9 January 1890, she was baptized and confirmed and received her first Holy Communion from the hands of the Patriarch of Venice. On 8 December 1869 in Verona, she took her vows in the congregation of the Canossian Sisters, and from that time onwards, besides her work in the sacristy and in the porter's lodge at the convent, she made several journeys round Italy in order to promote the missions. The liberation that she had received through her encounter with the God of Jesus Christ, she felt she had to extend. It had to be handed on to others, to the greatest possible number of people. The hope born in her, which had redeemed her, she could not keep to herself. This hope had to reach many, to reach everybody. The concept of faith-based hope in the New Testament and the early church. So that was Pope Benedict. We're closing out this segment talking about Saint Bikita. And let me tell you, I read a bit about her history, and this is a whole encyclical. She's just a small part of it. She had the most terrifying of masters at the young age, 9, 10, 11. She had mutilations that are unspeakable to young ears over the air. It's just unbelievable what happened to this young woman. And one of the problems, and why she has the name Bikita, she had so much trauma, she could not even remember her original name. Well, this is Dr. Michelle. We're going to catch this on the other side of the break, go into a lot more about the power of women on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me today on our path of life together. And we are walking in the power of women. And men, you can hang out with us too, because without the power of women, you would not be here. And without the power of women, you would not have hope for your daughters. So we need to keep that in mind, and we need not to split that down the middle. We don't need the wink, wink, nod, nods, and the false flattery. We need the honor and the dignity that powerful women deserve. And we need to give men the honor and dignity that powerful men deserve. But first, we got to learn how to be those things. So we look at things. That's why the Catholic Church is really cool, because sometimes you have to laugh and say they have a saint for everything. But like anyone else in the world, like I love Ernest Shackleton. He's not a saint. I don't know what religion he was, but he was a man of tremendous strength, honor, courage, and he was powerful. And so I love that. Now, he could have had all kinds of other stuff go on in his life. I don't know. So I want to, boy, this is our last segment, and I'm really kind of disappointed that we're not going to get to everything. I'm having such a fun time telling you about St. Josephine Bikita. I wanted to read something to you. This is from Father Cristino, and he wrote this on January 31st, 2014. It was the Saint of the Month thing. He says, let me see if I can find this. I'll skip the intro. It says, when finally in a place of comfort and security. Let's see. Ah, okay. This was, okay, he said, the highlight for me was the deafening and frightening shrieks and customary calls which were let out by many women when, at the end of Mass, the bishop informed them under whose patronage he was placing their community, St. Josephine Baquita. Now, this was in, he was at a Mass at an African and Caribbean Catholic community in a particular city he was visiting. He said, St. Josephine Baquita, like many of you, she was a woman who endured much suffering, but with firm trust in the Lord, she always persevered in hope and joy. And then he goes on to say, the lucky one, when finally in a place of comfort and security, St. Josephine would not even be able to recall the name she was given by her parents at birth. Such was the trauma she had suffered. From the age of 9, when she was forcibly kidnapped and taken from her family by slave traders, she would only ever go by Baquita, which was an Arabic word meaning fortunate, or more informally, lucky one. This title was certainly given sarcastically, as one could hardly imagine anything lucky about being kidnapped and sold as a slave at 9 years old. But Baquita never considered herself anything less than fortunate. She was sold in the markets of El Obeid and eventually Khartoum, where she would be imprisoned in between sales and subjected to the most indescribable conditions and physical tortures. Some of her owners were more violent than others. Some neglected to provide her with basic necessities, such as adequate food or lodging, while others would whip or pierce her, sometimes merely for pleasure. She was eventually purchased by an Italian consul in Sudan, who would bring her back with him to Italy. She realized this was possibly the defining moment that would keep her from seeing her parents and 7 siblings, including a twin sister, ever again. But no one had ever treated her with as much kindness as Mr. Lignani, and staying with him was a much better alternative to returning to the market. Upon arriving in Italy, the consul loaned his slave to a friend, Augusto Michelli, whose wife was expecting a baby. When their daughter, Mamina, was born, Baquita was allowed to stay with the family and assist in the child's care. She quickly grew attached to the family. It did not take long for Mamina to grow attached to Baquita. However, business was going to force Augusto and his wife Maria to travel abroad, and they did not want to bring Mamina with them. They therefore arranged that Baquita would stay behind as Mamina's nursemaid, and they would leave them both in the care of the Canossian Sisters Convent. It was here that Baquita would encounter her one true love. And that true love was God, as we talked about. We're going to be getting close to the end of our time here, but I want to show you what hope does, the power of hope. But powerful women, the Joan of Arc, who this morning I read the quote from one of our contributors that she happened to love. I'm not afraid. This is what I was born for. I mean, look what she ran into. Look what she spearheaded. She was ridiculed and just ostracized. And she was burned at the stake because she was wearing men's clothes. I mean, it was really pretty nasty stuff she encountered. But she kept going because she was powerful. She was plugged into that power of God. Baquita, I mean, when you read her story, it's unbelievable. And she reminded me of a woman I saw looking at these YouTubes of human trafficking, and a woman who was now a prostitute, if she would only get to the point of where Baquita was, who was sold early on in her life and subject to unspeakable things. But she said, you know, finding out I could get paid for this was like a dream come true. So could she get one more place? We can pray for her that she does. Because her life led her to that, thinking, boy, compared to what I went through before, this is the cake. This is great. I get paid. Well, we need God. We need hope. We need life. Baquita is the great patron saint to pray for that woman that I just saw on the YouTube. Pray for whoever. Pray for us who are in our own spiritual bondage, our own emotional bondage, our too small of a life bondage. worrying about this wrinkle and that wrinkle and this size of breast and that size of breast and this tummy tuck and that tummy tuck and who's better than we are and who's got a better life and who's more pious and who has more kids. And, you know, we really have to go down to our hearts. Our hearts are what matters. So, closing pretty much with how we started in the same encyclical from Pope Benedict, I want to read to you something he says way at the end, but down in like section 48, 49. He says, our lives are involved with one another. That's what I tell you. That's why I like to hear your stories. Through innumerable interactions, they are linked together. No one lives alone. No one sins alone. No one is saved alone. The lives of others continually spill over into mine in what I think, say, do, and achieve. And conversely, my life spills over into that of others, for better and for worse. So my prayer for another is not something extraneous to that person, something external, not even after death. In the interconnectedness of being, capital B, my gratitude to the other, my prayer for him, can play a small part in his purification. And for that, there is no need to convert earthly time into God's time. In the communion of souls, simple terrestrial time is superseded. It is never too late to touch the heart of another, nor is it ever in vain. In this way, we further clarify an important element of the Christian concept of hope. Our hope is always essentially also hope for others. Only thus is it truly hope for me too. As Christians, we should never limit ourselves to asking, how can I save myself? We should also ask, what can I do in order that others may be saved, and that for them too the star of hope may rise? Then I will have done my utmost for my own personal salvation as well. Man, I think I'm liking Pope Benedict more. Mary, Star of Hope. We'll end with this one, I think. With a hymn composed in the 8th or 9th century, thus for over 1,000 years, the Church has greeted Mary, the Mother of God, as the Star of the Sea. Ave Maris, Stella. Human life is a journey. Towards what destination? How do we find the way? Life is like a voyage on the sea of history, often dark and stormy, a voyage in which we watch for the stars that indicate the route. The true stars of our life are the people who have lived good lives. They are lights of hope. Certainly Jesus Christ is the true light, the sun that has risen above all the shadows of history. But to reach him, we also need light close by. People who shine with his light and so guide us along our way. Who more than Mary could be a star of hope from her, a star of hope for us? With her, quote, yes, unquote, she opened the door of our world to God himself. She became the living ark of the covenant in whom God took flesh, became one of us, and pitched his tent among us. That's from John 1, verse 14. So we cry to her, we'll end with this, Holy Mary, you belong to the humble and the great souls of Israel, who, like Simeon, were looking for the consolation of Israel and hoping, like Anna, quote, for the redemption of Jerusalem, unquote. Your life has thoroughly imbued with the sacred scriptures of Israel, which spoke of hope of the promise made to Abraham and his descendants. In this way, we can appreciate the holy fear that came over you when the angel of the Lord appeared to you and told you that you would give birth to the one who was the hope of Israel. All right, well, I'm just so excited to share all that with you and learn so much myself today. I have a new friend who's Pope Benedict, but I want you all to reflect on this thing. We are people of power. We'll see you tomorrow.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.